Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
We're good to go. Welcome to In the Jar. Friendly faces ain't far. Week after week, we don't have a cigar because it stinks up the damn studio. You know what I'm talking about? I got my editor-in-chief, Mr. Luke Fry, sitting across from me. We thought we'd do things a little different this week. And, you know, just kind of letting the deal flow. What's going on, dog?
Nothing much, man. Hanging out.
Realized my headphones wasn't even on.
Oh, yeah. Look at you. At least you can still hear me because we're in the same room.
Yeah, hundo. So, just like every week, we're going to roll through this thing. Thought we'd read the email inbox, see what's going on. We've been doing that to open the show the last couple of weeks, you know, first 30 minutes or so. So,
hell yeah, James Clear.
You know, I mean, shit.
It's more than just that now.
The internet is sometimes, I don't want to say slow here in the house, but when I got to show up to shoot and I haven't uploaded the clips for the show yet, sometimes it takes a little bit to get them in. But, you know, it's just one of those things where sometimes, you know, I just like to run my mouth. And we're doing two shoots today. I'm headed to Nashville, Tennessee for a week and some change. So we're doing a 2-for-1 today. And so this will be the first one y'all see, episode 19. But, you know, just trying to switch it up, see what we got. Let's start it off with some James Clear. So 3, 2, 1. When to be patient, why we procrastinate, and the importance of early attempts. So every email we got this week, I get a series of newsletters. So we'll probably talk about some market stuff, some business stuff. Obviously, we'll get deep into the philosophy, kind of like we've been doing every week. But, you know, there's a really good newsletter from a company called Front Office Sports. And the point of Front Office Sports is it's like covering the business side of sports. So when I was working in the sports business, we were talking about that earlier. You know, you had to kind of stay up on what was going on, whether that's because you're looking for a promotion to make the next step up in your career, or when you're calling people trying to sell them tickets, like I was, a lot of times they'll be like, you know, especially when I was working with the Yotes, they'll be like, hey, like, what's going on with the arena situation? Like, are you guys going to have a place to play? Are you going to relocate? Obviously, you saw what happened, right?
They relocated.
Yeah, they fucking, and it was heartbreaking. But, you know, we would always have to tell them, like, hey, you know, Mr. Morello, our owner, he's got this in motion. Like, we're, you know, we can't say a lot, but, like, here's the deal. So my point is, like, you know, I had to subscribe to newsletters like Front Office Sports to, like, stay up on the business side of what's going on. You know, there's a lot of good publications about that. Sports Business Journal is another one where you kind of – It goes beyond what's covered to that, like, average sports fan, you know, if you're watching games on TV every week or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Speaking of the Arizona Coyotes moving, I feel like every other person I've heard talk about this has said that they're going to miss him and they're sad about it.
Yeah.
And then the people that I don't hear say that are saying the exact opposite. It seems like there's no in between.
Yeah.
There's been very, the only people that say that they just don't care are people that just don't care about sports in general.
Yeah.
But it's like some people are like, yeah, good riddance, you know.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out.
And I don't understand
that. Their point has always been that Arizona is hot. And I'm like, okay.
Well, like Tampa Bay's hot.
The fucking arena's indoors, dude.
Las Vegas is.
Keep the ice alive in the sun.
Yeah.
And also.
That's weird.
Like getting away from all the heat and being able to go to a hockey game, I feel like it's part of the charm of it when you're in this part of the world. When you're in Minnesota, it's just, you know, another Tuesday.
There have been
more special.
There have been markets lately. It's definitely been in the last like 6 years that have like done, like hockey's done really well there. Like Tampa Bay, the Lightning, they won a couple Stanley Cups too. It helps to have a good team.
Yeah, that too.
Phoenix is kind of Phoenix sports, other than the Suns, and the Suns have, you know, kind of yet to get a championship deal done lately. But they've had good teams. But other than the Suns, like, you know, like the Cardinals haven't been popping for a long time. The Yotes obviously haven't been popping for a long time. So it's easy for people to jump on a bandwagon when times are good, but the only way times can get good in sports is if you have a proper owner, a proper executive staff running the business side of things, and then a proper general manager or someone overseeing the on-field, on-ice type of deal. And it's really hard to pull together, you know, a really good team in each department. It's just life, you know what I'm saying? Is my camera tilted weird, or are we good? Okay. So, yeah, it depends on the team winning. That's the biggest thing, and that's obviously the hardest thing to do, right? But, you know, Tampa Bay's done well in hockey. Vegas has obviously been a huge success. People really – and, I mean, Nashville's kind of a different place climate-wise. Like, obviously, it still gets kind of cold in Nashville, but, like, they – that market did really well. Like, who the hell would think that – you know, a country music city would, you know, I'm talking 10 years ago. Obviously, everyone's behind it now. But, like, you know, it's just one of those things. Anyway, okay, so we got 3-2-1 with James Clear. When to be patient, why we procrastinate, and the importance of early attempts. I don't even know if I understand that yet. Okay, three ideas. One, my personal rule is that it's a good idea to be patient as long as I'm in the mix. If I'm taking action, putting in my reps, and trying things out, then I should remain patient and see what opportunities arise. But if I'm not taking action consistently, then I'm not practicing patience. I'm just waiting. What do you think about that?
I think practicing patience is pretty important. Sitting there and just waiting has probably been a great majority of my life. Patience is something that I personally need to work on. I don't know about how you feel about your own patience, but I'm very impatient with myself, and I'm very impatient with timeliness of things, especially if like someone says 3 o'clock and I'm like, you know, where the fuck is 3 o'clock? You know, come on.
Yeah. Well, and time management is something I could definitely get better at. It's one thing, you know, like say I have client, you know, obviously it's about prioritization, right? So, you know, if I need to be somewhere at a certain time, I'll try and make sure that I'm at said place like way or like an hour or 2 hours early. You know, like I missed a flight a couple years ago. I don't remember when it was, but like now I make sure I'm at the airport 2 hours or like type shit. You know, with client meetings, I'll make sure I'm at the office. If the meeting's at 2, right, I'm still probably going to be in the office from like, you know, 11 to, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, I have a really bad history with time management, and with that came a lot of stress about time management. Mm-hmm. But once you get it dialed in, once you say, okay, you know, I got to be at work at 9:30 instead of leaving the house at 9 and just maybe getting there at 9:30 if you're lucky, you know,
yeah,
8:50 or whatever. It takes so much stress out of the situation. Whether it just be speeding down the road and stressing about that, mm-hmm. or just, you know, stressing about whether or not you're going to get fired, or in your situation, if that client's going to even take you seriously, or missing your flight, and then all those things pile up.
Well, because, like, you know, I've never been late to a client meeting, but I would imagine if I was, you know,
pretty damn stressful.
You're working uphill, you know, like in terms of, you know, getting this household to agree with letting you manage the most intimate aspect of their life, their finances. And it's like, you know,
yeah, you're already working uphill without being late.
I know. Yeah. It's like, you know, and first impressions are important. It's just one of those things where you got to eliminate every single controllable possible, right? Because 100 different things could happen when I'm meeting with a new person or any situation, right? When you're trying to solve a problem, get over a hump, do whatever. Like 80, there might be 100 things that happen. 80 of them are going to be out of my control. Maybe 90, right? But if I can make sure that the 10 controllables are in line, I've done everything I can do up to that point. And that's going to help with my confidence throughout the process too, knowing that all those things are in check, you know
that whatever could be dialed is.
Right, because it's like, you know, wearing something nice, you know, the list goes on, being on time, doing your due diligence, whatever that is, like, and then you can just kind of, I don't know, it's kind of like anything else performance related. The only way you're going to be supremely confident going into that endeavor is if you're confident in your action leading up to that moment.
Oh yeah. Even if it's like a fake it till you make it kind of thing, if you can, maybe you don't have it all figured out, but if you can have that confidence in yourself that you're gonna push through and figure it out, sometimes I feel like you can make it. Definitely not always. If you're walking in a financial advisor situation, mm-hmm. if I just said I was a financial advisor and met with someone today, I'd have a pretty hard time climbing up that hill.
Yeah.
No matter how confident I was, because I know nothing about it.
Well, I read something pretty powerful a couple of weeks ago. It said action reduces fear.
I totally agree with that.
Because, like, obviously, you know, you're showing up to something meaningful. There's going to be a bit of fear there. And I think that fear to some extent is good, because that anxiety tells you that, like, hey, I care about what I'm doing. I care about whether it goes well or not. And so I think if you kind of reframe anxiety leading up to a big event that way, it can look like more of an opportunity as opposed to like something that I could fuck up. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because I've gone into so many big things with that mentality in my life before. It just takes time to learn, right? I mean, everybody will learn that at some point. And it's just like, you can either let that fear or anxiety consume you, or you can harness it and kind of almost like, what is it, Dragon Ball Z, where you fucking hone it, like, you know, yeah, what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, I guess they call it like power blasts in Dragon mm-hmm. Ball. I'm trying to think of a better terminology that still relates to that, but my mind's kind of drawing a blank.
Okay, so here we go. Number two, you'll probably surprise yourself with what you can accomplish if you're focused on one thing. You'll probably frustrate yourself with what you fail to accomplish if you're doing 5 or 7 or 10 things. Nobody performs well when stretched in a half dozen directions. What do you think?
I think it's true. But I think it's also unfortunate for someone like me to hear someone who wants to dip their toe into every pool that they can.
Yeah.
And also be swimming in all that water at the same time. Like,
yeah.
Because the way that I at least perceive a quote like that, it's like, okay, I am kind of doing like five or six things. I'm like producing podcasts, I'm working a job, and I'm like trying to do my own side hustle with like a reptile business.
Oh, yeah.
Like terrarium building and stuff like that.
Well, you love that shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So it's like, but would I be more content and more satisfied with the possible better success that could come from just really honing in on one of those things?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's about, I'm reading a book right now. I think I actually got it from like one of Tim's stories. He reads some great books, and it's called The Essentialist.
Yes,
I
need to read that.
It's a great book.
I got recommended that book from him as well.
Yeah, so it's just talking about, I mean, to me, the essence of that book is you have to understand what's important.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
To you and what you're trying to accomplish, and then you kind of reverse engineer from there. So if I understand that my life mission is to connect with people and inspire people, then I can kind of reverse engineer it and say, I'm kind of good at running my mouth. You know, I might start a podcast or be a financial advisor or whatever, because those two activities, some people might say, why the hell are you podcasting? Like, focus on growing your business, you know, that type of thing. It's kind of the same stigma that a lot of NFL players face when they were first like jumping on podcasts and stuff. They'd be like, shut up and play ball. Like, keep the main thing the main thing. And I think that's a very good phrase, right? Keeping the main thing the main thing. It's just, there might be a couple of main things, or for in your case, there might be five or six main things. And it's like, if you can figure out what aligns with your life values, then I don't think you're spreading yourself too thin by doing five or six things, because I would bet that some of those things give you energy, right? Yeah. Give you more energy to, you know, produce in the other category at a higher capacity, right? Because it's all uphill. It's all about momentum. Like, I started guitar lessons when I was 9, and I started playing football about the same time. And what took precedent? Ball. You know what I'm saying? And so I stopped playing guitar consistently. And I'm finally starting to pick it back up. And part of me is like, dude, you know, picking up music, like, that's just going to take another hour out of your schedule either every day. That's just going to take another 30 minutes or whatever. But I was like, no, you know, it really gives me energy. That tells me that there's something about it that aligns with my life mission, my values. And, you know, even if it's like the past couple of days, you know, I'll do my meditation practice and then my guitar is sitting right there. So I'll just grab the guitar and pick on it for, you know, I think today I did like 10, 15 minutes, but I showed up, you know, and I think showing up for 15 minutes a day on some kind of craft you're doing, right? Could be woodwork. Martial arts is obviously a hobby of a lot of us and a lot of our friends. And I think those crafts translate over into other areas of your life. You know, it's like momentum almost. I don't know.
Yeah. I really like what you said about these things give me energy, and mm-hmm. therefore it's like, it's not a waste for that 1 hour. And I think that's part of where I've been going wrong, and I don't know if I need to even go as far to as like delete YouTube off of my phone or something, but I might have to do something like that, because there's a lot of like, there's a lot of things I like to do. For example, play guitar, like you said, or like, you know, I make music, I make rap music, but I also do some guitar and like drums and stuff on those tracks as well.
That's probably something that gives you energy, right?
100%. But back in 2022, I had a really gnarly car crash and like 2 back-to-back concussions. I had to kind of relearn how to speak and structure sentences and stuff.
Holy shit.
And music and stuff took a total back seat.
Had to,
and
right?
Because I couldn't write lyrics if I didn't know the words.
Right.
I never gave it that front seat again, and it was in the front seat for so long, and I just kind of kicked music to the back, and I still every once in a while go to work on it, but it's probably less than once a week.
Yeah, and see, that's, I mean, I don't know, man. I was thinking about this on my walk this morning, like, even if it's like 10 minutes a day, like, and you just like show up, like,
yeah, I gotta, you know, get better at doing stuff like that, but I just don't have like a on or off switch for any of the things I like to do. Sometimes I'll be like, I go on YouTube because I'm not in the mood to do anything else, and I like watch fucking whatever the hell.
Yeah,
usually educational stuff, but I do watch a couple, like, you know, random just stuff for entertainment. But
yeah,
YouTube, I'll spend like 6 hours doing that, and then all of a sudden I'll be in the mood to fucking, like, I don't know, work, like, clean out my snake's enclosures or whatever for 2 hours, and then, like, start, like, checking the market and looking at things for, like, possible future breeding projects and stuff like that. And then I'll be able to spend an hour or whatever working on music, and then go spend 2 hours doing something productive. But it's all really sporadic and just all over the place. I don't have any structure to it.
You'll find it.
I don't know if that's something that I'm able to implement.
You'll be able to implement it at some point. All right, number 3. Whether you're an adult or child, your first attempts will often seem unimportant or foolish. The open mic night in a nearly empty bar, the early blog posts that get ignored, the dance recital on a little stage. Early attempts are easy to dismiss because they don't seem to amount to much. But if you have to do the low-stakes stuff to prepare for the high-stakes stuff, they are building blocks of confidence, and that's an enormous thing. So I call this windshield time. How much time out on the road have you spent? You get what I'm saying? Like, with this, you know what I'm saying? Like, we started this off, and, you know, there, it's just the nature of the beast, right? There ain't going to be a ton of people watching. But, you know, the confidence of showing up, I feel this is a beautiful craft, podcasting, because you have to have that self-generated belief before anybody else kind of believes in you. And you're not going to see a lot of, what did you say? It took Tim like 7 years?
Yeah, that's what he said. He said it took him 7 years to, he's been at it for 7 years now.
That's like, such an inspiration to me.
Now he's at the point where it's actually substantial. We're like,
yeah,
you know, we started the Confidential Pod 18 weeks ago, something like that. And he said that his Patreon, like, expectancy for what he wanted for the whole year, he's already done 8 times that, and he's in May. And he said it's all from the Confidential Pod. And he said, but no one would have even cared or wanted to hear the Confidential Pod or subscribe to that Patreon to hear the Confidential Pod if he hadn't spent that 7 years grinding first.
And just like showing up for showing up's sake.
Yeah, showing up and being there and giving the people a reason to listen to you.
Yeah, because it's like nobody's going to be good at anything when they first start. But But you're only going to get better by showing up each week. And I think the universe rewards you for investing that every week. Like, we're going to be doing this every week for a long time. And what, you know, it's like that. It's anybody can, you know, buy a couple of mics and, you know, sit down and shoot the shit. But can you do it? Can you keep producing over and over each week? Keep coming back for more. Even if, you know, like, there's a couple pods we posted that get like 11 views. And it's like, you know, that's great. And I think that that grind, that humility you get when first starting something is what will make you appreciate the success when it comes. Not if it comes, yeah. When it comes. Because it's going to come if we just, you know, we're in it every week. We're in the mix, right? That's all it is.
Dude.
So I think there's a theme on this little James Clear newsletter this week.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, and on that note of, like, just consistency and not if it comes, but when it comes. Look at Mr. Beast. I think he went at least his first year before he hit 100 subscribers.
Yeah.
I think, like, he was at like 30
we're already or something
at, after his first year.
We're already at 66. Hoes. No, but I got it. Sometimes I'll, like, not compulsively. I feel like I've got decent prefrontal cortex function, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, there have been a couple.
Can't relate.
The nice thing about that is it's a skill, bro. Meditation, I talk about it all the time on this damn thing. It'll change your life.
Yeah.
And that's something, too, where you ain't going to see the benefit for, like, for me, I didn't really see a physical, tangible benefit with meditation until 3 years of doing it every day.
I hear that,
about that
so often. Yeah. And I need to be so much better about my meditation because I'm a fucking...
Don't beat yourself up. Everybody's got their own journey, you know.
100,000%.
Yeah.
I'm also... I'm a Taoist. I have...
hell yeah.
I have stuff... Like, I have words for the Buddha and from the Buddha written on my own.
Yeah, you mentioned
stuff
that.
Like that. And it's like... And I preach this stuff, but I'm not practicing what I'm preaching.
Don't be hard on yourself, dog.
I do try to live that lifestyle of just trying to give nothing but love to everybody that I can when I can.
Hell yeah.
But I'm not doing the meditation aspect, even though I'm out there telling people about how good it is.
And that's a way you can take care of yourself 10 minutes every day so that you can love others that much better. You know what I'm saying? Okay, two quotes from others. Software engineer Kent Beck on why creators struggle to release projects and why people in general don't take action. By far, the dominant reason for not releasing sooner was a reluctance to trade the dream of success for the reality of feedback. That's crazy. That's pretty good. Two, actor Philip Seymour Hoffman on making the most of your opportunities. This is something a teacher told me years ago, and he's right. If you're auditioning for something that you know you're never going to get, or maybe you read the script and didn't even like it, but you still have to go, if you get a chance to act in a room that somebody else has paid rent for, then you're given a free chance to practice your craft. And in that moment, you should act as well as you can. Because when you leave the room and you have acted as well as you can, there's no way the people who have watched you will forget it. It's like it's the theme of this is just like, just start, you know. And everybody's got those things that they wish they would do, and they just never seem to be able to find time for it. And it's like, you know, one thing I respect about you is, like, everything you care about, like, you're doing. Like, you were being hard on yourself for saying I spread myself too thin or whatever. But I think it's a blessing that you have as many things that you do that you're passionate about.
It's a blessing and a curse, man. I just, like, I'm fascinated by
two sides to each coin. You know what I mean? One question for you. Take whatever you're trying to accomplish and ask, how could this be as easy as possible? How can I make meditating each day as easy as possible? How can I make showing appreciation to my partner as easy as possible? How can I make finding great investment opportunities as easy as possible? And so on. You may be surprised how effective the early version can be. So that's kind of, I talked about the guitar habit I'm trying to build. You know, I just started doing that this week. And, you know, I got my little Shakti mat, my bed of nails that I lay on when I meditate. And the guitar's sitting right there. So when I sit up, that shit's right in front of me. And I just grab it and I just pick on it a little bit. You know what I'm saying? And so I feel like that's something I did a decent job of making easy on myself. You know, with the cold, like, you know, we were talking about the cold calling every day. Man, that's hard to show up to that every day and get rejected by 99% of folks, right? But, you know, I'll take the little YouTube, throw it on here. Not too loud so they can hear it on the phone, but I'll throw a Hank Williams Jr. concert on there. Open the windows. The blinds on the windows so I can see what's going on outside. And it's like, you know, I'm in this space and I'm kind of like, okay, like this is nice. This is easy. I'm in an environment where it's easy for me to call someone up and shoot the shit with them, even though I ain't talked to a single word to them my whole life type shit. Yeah, I mean.
Do you do your cold calls out of this room?
Yeah.
Oh,
right here.
Oh, this is just your...
This is my space,
bro. 101 studio, huh?
This is the hub right here. This is where all the good juice gets done. Yeah, I mean, it's... And I feel like, dude, it was talking about, like, building that confidence of showing up to something even though you're not really getting the tangible deal from it yet. It's like I can feel the momentum in this room. I can feel the energy of... the time we've already put into like this show, and that was kind of the catalyst for, you know, everything else. It's been a real blessing, man. Okay. So we've got, what else do we got here? Let's do Robin Hood snacks. So we're going to do something we've never done on this show before. We're going to see what's going on in the market. If I can find it. Front office. Is he at the dough? No, that's Mikey. Yeah, let's just do front office sports. If I can find it. I gotta read my damn emails, bro. Okay. So this is a good one. So, Luke, you might not have heard this, but there's a PGA tournament going on in my home state right now.
Kentucky.
And the best golfer in the world, Scottie Scheffler, was arrested this morning. I think this morning, the day of the shooting. Dude, I think it was a normal traffic stop and it kind of escalated. So this is a live reading. We're gonna see what juice we get out of this. Scottie Scheffler was two strokes off the lead when he finished his second round at the PGA Championship on Friday afternoon. But the number one golfer in the world nearly didn't make it to Valhalla Golf Club earlier in the morning. In what would have been a major blow to the second major championship, fans paying $250 for general admission tickets in Louisville, Kentucky, and the tournament's broadcast partners, it's ESPN and CBS. It would have been an economic hit for everyone. So, tragedy and confusion. It's been a chaotic, traumatic day in Kentucky. I'm not unfamiliar with that. And there are still plenty of questions and unresolved matters. But here's what happened. Early Friday morning, a worker for a PGA Championship vendor was struck and killed by a shuttle bus outside Valhalla Golf Club. As a result, the second round was delayed about an hour and a half, and both fans and players dealt with huge traffic delays. While Scheffler was driving to the course, he was stopped and arrested after driving past a police officer. Despite the incident and being charged on four counts, including second-degree assault of a police officer, which is a felony, Scheffler was released from custody and teed off on time at 10:08 a.m. Eastern. While statements from... Actually, let's go into exactly what happened on the traffic stop. I want to see this. Uh-huh. Scheffler was handcuffed and put into the back of a cop car. Darlington said the officers were not aware who Scheffler was, and they told the golfer he was going to jail. Darlington, let's see, ESPN reporter Jeff Darlington later appeared on television and described the scene. A cop attached himself to Scheffler's car, and the golfer kept driving for 10 yards. The officer then tried to pull Scheffler out of the car before Scheffler opened the door and was arrested. According to Darlington, the golf star asked the reporter for help before he was put in the back of the police car. Scheffler was booked and charged with second-degree assault of a police officer, third-degree criminal mischief, reckless driving, and disregarding traffic signals from an officer directing traffic. The official police report says the officer stopped Scheffler and attempted to give him instructions, but the golfer refused to comply and accelerated forward, dragging Detective Gillis to the ground. It also stated that Gillis suffered pain, swelling, and abrasions to his left wrist and knee. The cop's pants, which the report says were valued at $80, were also damaged beyond repair. They're throwing their arms up about $80.
Jesus.
Bro. So it says there might be a legal battle pending, but Scheffler did play today. As of the time of this shooting that I'm aware. And I saw something on Twitter. I don't know if it was a joke. I think it was probably an altered photo, but it was of a weight. And Scottie Scheffler is the best golfer in the world. And he's number three on the board as of a couple of hours ago when I checked. Somebody tweeted a wager that said Scottie Scheffler, it was a prop bet, Scottie Scheffler wins the tournament pending, you know, he gets out of jail. And it had this, like, disclaimer on the wager that said, like, you know, if Scottie Scheffler, like, gets out of, or doesn't get out of jail, like, this bet isn't going to be voided. Like, that was part of the odds on the bet. And so, and again, I don't think this was real, but the guy, this wager said $50, and the payout said $100,000. I don't think it was real. I don't want to spread misinfo, I feel like, but
that's got to be Photoshopped. Yeah, but if that's
because he's the best golfer in the world.
Just thinking about the idea of it being real is fun.
Mm-hmm. He played today, and he's like up there on the leaderboard. But you know, there were folks on Twitter today. The political scene's really hot, and I'm not going to speak about a lot of things because then we'll really get in the jar, and I don't want to do that. But
then we'll be getting out of the jar.
But everybody was like, Democrats tried so hard to lock Scottie Scheffler up, and like, you know, the liberals are having, you know, they're not having a field day because Scottie's fucking back. Like people like tried to like politically align with it. That was funny because there's literally like, you know, there's nothing behind that. But
yeah, dude, one of my favorite Stephen King quotes was, there's a lot of people that like to add political icing to things.
Yeah.
When really they're just fucking dumb.
Yeah, for real. Everybody got a damn opinion, you know. Let's see. So it looks like Netflix and Amazon are going to take over some NFL broadcasts. So
that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So Netflix is winning the rights to two-day Christmas Day NFL games this season. Marks the addition of yet another new Salado verbal fluff. 100 just began fresh rights deals in some capacity. The NFL just, you know, they're starting to switch up their media rights deal. It's worth a combined $110 billion.
You know, I would personally prefer, correct me if I misheard it, but it sounded like they just got the rights to stream certain games.
Yes, so
I would prefer if we just got some sort of contract with it, whether it be Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime, whatever.
So Netflix,
all the NFL games, just, you can watch them live, or you can even go back and watch them just in one place. Kind of like what we have with UFC, but I'd prefer not to have a separate dedicated streaming service like UFC does. I'd prefer to have that, just have them make some contract with Netflix or Hulu or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, I saw something on Twitter that said if you are a football fan and want to watch every single game this season, the streaming cost for the whole season is like north of $800.
Yeah, and that's like,
that's, yeah, it's not the way it should be.
This, the industry could benefit so much from a change in that, because there's so many hardcore football fans,
yeah,
that I have met that just stream these games illegally because of, you know, reasons like that.
Yeah.
So it's like the NFL's getting zero money out of those people.
Well, and even on the illegal streams, like, it's all in one place.
Exactly. So it's like, why not revamp this system so that not only people can afford it, but they're not breaking the law, and
right,
you guys, the NFL, are benefiting from it too, and you can use that money for whatever you want.
Well, the streaming services are just going to have to get really creative and keep the consumer at the forefront of their mind. And I think they'll be able to work out some, like, cross platforms. Here's the thing, right? That in the streaming industry, I know it's well established, but in the grand scheme of humankind, right, modern history, it's very new. So just like everything else that's emerging, you know, AI, I could go down the list. It's just going to take time for the newness to sort itself out. So I think over time they'll start to consolidate it. I know with baseball, it's really hard to pin down, like, what service each game is on, and there's so many baseball games. There's 162 games a year, mm-hmm, and people are like, and some of these companies, like Bally Sports, has had some financial trouble, and so, you know, they had to have someone come in and buy them out, and, you know, so now you got a different company running that. It's really, and then there's Apple TV rights with the Major League Baseball, so it's like people get really, there's so many games, and one game might be on a different network than another game. Mm-hmm. And then you have local blackouts. You have all these different, because the local TV networks want to pick some of them up. So, but yeah, I mean, I think the not so bold prediction is that, you know, TV stations are either going to have to adapt or get lost. Cable TV businesses are going to have to either adapt, get bought up, or get lost. And, you know, it'll end up being a better world. So anyway, the Netflix is paying $150 million for two holiday broadcasts, right? And that's from the Wall Street Journal.
I wonder how much they'd have to pay to have, or I guess how much profit they'd have to share to have every NFL game on there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds so,
probably upwards of a billion, huh?
Yeah, so the rights deals themselves, and I'm sure this isn't amongst everybody or all the games, was worth $110 billion.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so it's a lot of money.
It's one of America's biggest industries besides, like, oil.
Dude, the thing that I love about sports is it's just, it connects people. And, you know, two folks that have never spoken a word to each other could be, you know, like, one person could be wearing a Bengals shirt in the airport and be like, huh, are you from Cincinnati? You're already talking.
Yeah. You already have at least one thing in common with that person.
65, 70,000 people screaming all for one cause is not something that happens very often anymore other than in sports. So it's just one of those things. That's why I love it so much, is the connection. Okay. What's going on in business? Okay. This is the 10 point from the Wall Street Journal, so it might have some political stuff. Okay. Donald Trump's allies are drawing up plans for an unprecedented immigration crackdown, including an effort that would deport asylum seekers. President Biden, wow, this is charged stuff, Luke. President Biden is courting black voters this weekend in a flurry of high-profile events, aiming to reclaim support among a once-reliable voting bloc. Let's see. What else do we got? A group of American doctors and nurses who went to Gaza for a medical mission are now trapped there with dwindling food supplies. That sucks. This is some political stuff. I don't like this. Let's see.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of anything that's voiced, at least in terms of politics, I'm not a big fan of anything on news outlets that's,
yeah,
voiced in favor of one side.
Well, and that's all you get.
I don't, exactly.
That's all you get.
And the thing that I hate the most about a lot of it is singling out or separating or just pulling out groups to try to gain sympathy. Is Biden's administration is courting black voters.
Yeah.
Why not? If they really care about justice being brought to whatever voting situation is going on, I don't know what's going on, but why not just bring voters in?
Why, yeah, I don't know.
Why do we have to pull a specific group of people out?
It's just, yeah.
I feel like the mention of race is just always so overdone.
Yeah.
I'm not going to.
It's an emotional topic.
Yeah. I'm not going to disagree that there's racist people out there, but I feel like so many people bring up race like way earlier than it needs to be brought up, if it was ever going to be brought up at all.
Okay. Investors are winning in almost every market. Almost everything is going up. Established Dow stocks, faster growing tech shares, Bitcoin and other cryptos, and even gold and other precious metals. Risk averse investors have a bounty of options too, including CDs, certificates of deposit, offering yields of about 5%, adding to the glow. So a couple of experts, that's leading to another headline. It's a weird market. Weird market, because our country has not gotten over interest rates yet, and we're still dealing with a frothy dollar supply from COVID. Because again, like you and I, we talked about the gold standard earlier, right?
Our economy fucking sucks right now. Sorry to just interject. Yeah,
no, I mean, I don't think it sucks. I think innovation's higher than it's ever been because technology we've created, right? The AI, it's gonna, and that's a scary topic in and of its own right because you know I've read some books on it and it's like. If AI gets to a certain point, it could be very dangerous for humans.
Dude, we're talking Skynet.
So it's like...
Or just replacing us, or jobs and things like that, replacing the hard thinkers that we have right now.
One of the books I read on AI was, it did a really good job of like painting a picture and, you know, kind of helping your brain compare humans AI to other examples in nature, and one of them was talking about the fallacy of, well, AI is just computers, like how can they like physically, you know, harm us, because basically on the idea that like it's physically smaller than us. And the book did a really good job of saying, hey, like elephants are much bigger, much stronger, much more physically capable than a human. But yet, we've almost driven them extinct. Why is that? Because we have a higher level of consciousness than these animals. And so, we're able to say, hey, I might not be able to physically overpower an elephant, but I can create a rifle.
Yeah, exactly.
That freaking drills that boy in the noggin right quick and gets through all that tough skin. So... it kind of, and I'm probably not doing a good job of painting the picture myself, but it's called Life 3.0 by Max Tegmark. This is a book I read, and it painted that picture, and warfare could get really ugly with AI. You know, I'm sure there's weapons and artillery that us common folk have no idea is out there.
Dude, there's...
I can only imagine
mm-hmm. what it would be like if shit hit the fan with AI. Because have you heard of Boston Dynamics or seen any of their videos?
No.
They're a company, as the name implies, probably out of Boston.
Yeah.
And they have, like, robot dogs and other robots and shit. And they can run fast. And these robots, they can do these human acrobatic type things way better than any human can. I'm talking like triple backflipping and dodging multiple objects and shit like that. And the most recent one I saw, which was actually from a few months back, but I just hadn't kept up with them, they put a flamethrower on the dog.
Wow.
On this robot dog.
So, I heard about, like...
If that shit hit the fan, if that robot dog became evil, dude, it's got a flamethrower on its back.
you're gonna get smoked.
Yeah.
Quite literally.
You probably shoot it and stuff, but what if we get to the point where these are durable enough to be resistant to things like that?
There was something else I read in that Life 3.0 book about like killer wasps that have face recognition. Robot killer wasps.
Oh, fuck that, dude.
Like fucking swarms. Gives you. And you just send them on somebody you don't like.
Do they send? Okay, what I'm curious about is, I feel like medicine and science is advanced enough where there's tons of poisons that we know about or venoms that can such a tiny amount, like micrograms, can be injected and it'll kill you.
Mm.
Why do they need a swarm of these wasps? Why don't they just send one after the person and just stings them and they die?
It's not about the money. It's about sending a message. Dude, I just showed my girl the Dark. My girl had never seen The Dark Knight.
Oh.
And I got the privilege of being the one that showed it to her. And so now every single Joker line that comes out of my mouth, it happens in everyday life way too much for me. She now understands it.
Heath Ledger was a good Joker.
Bro.
Christian Bale, good Batman.
Great, bro. Heath Ledger's performance in Dark Knight was the single, not just acting performance. I truly believe that the job he did, Heath Ledger, on The Dark Knight is the most masterful portrayal of a craft that anybody could possibly hope to achieve in an endeavor. I'm that firm on that. He's the greatest acting job of all time.
I think he's really high up there. I think other good examples are Christian Bale with things like The Machinist, when he dropped to literally like 95 pounds or some shit.
Oh, yeah.
Role. These actors that become the embodiment of the character that they're playing, just that's a whole nother level. I think Joaquin Phoenix, or however you pronounce his name, the new Joker,
he's a great job.
Really, really good. But as far as I know, he also doesn't really become that guy when they're offset and stuff. Like, Heath Ledger was kind of stuck as the Joker for a good
one. That's
before he died.
That role took his life, man. He gave his life to that role, literally.
He put everything he had into it.
Going into his insane asylums. I mean, even down to the scene in the movie where they're blowing up the hospital. And you know when he's pressing the button and he, like, turns around and he's like... And
that
then it blows up.
That scene was so funny. I remember seeing that in theaters.
You know the story behind it?
No, was that...
They had one
didn't work or something?
They had one take to do this. They had one take. And so, like, when the thing's not blowing up and he's clicking the button and then he turns around and goes... That was real.
Yeah, that's him signaling to the crew.
And
I don't know what the fuck.
And it turned into one of the greatest scenes, in my opinion, of all time in movies. And he was just going with it, right? And I think that shows you how dialed in he was on being that. And that can, and I think he, at the end of the day, he let that consume him. You know, all that time he spent in mental asylums observing these people, and you know, he gave his life to this shit.
I think if we combined all of his performance with just the new fucking Joker's, like, laugh, and maybe a little bit of that kind of dancing and all the cigarette smoking he's doing.
Yeah.
That would be perfect. But still played by Heath Ledger. Just add a couple little more things to that character.
Okay, so how's the U.S. financial system preparing for another meme stock frenzy? You remember when GameStop and all those different companies went off back in the day?
GME, AMC, Knock, which is Nokia. There's a few others I can't remember off the top of my head, but yeah.
I had a buddy one time text me. He said, hey, you know, and I can talk about these stocks because I don't invest my clients in them. I don't buy them. I'm totally unaffiliated with them. But I had a buddy text me. He came to me one time and he didn't come to me. He just texted me. And he says, it was when Peloton stock was up like, you know, 60, 80%, something. This was like 2-3 years ago. He said, hey, bub, like, hope you're doing good. I just wanted to see what you thought about Peloton stock. And I had a colleague in the business that told me, like, hey, anytime, like, friends, relatives that may not have as much knowledge of the markets as you, like, reach out to you, like, asking for asking if, like, you know, this hot stock is going to be good. Don't ever buy that stock because it'll... So that's what they're talking about here. So I remember when this happened too. Robinhood, it was a popular brokerage for stock purchases, blocked purchases of meme stocks on January 28th, 2021. Robinhood did that because it was unable to meet a $3 billion margin call from the depository, so that the DTC, Depository Trust and Clearing Corp, which clears the trades. So Robinhood, these people, so when it means $3 billion margin call, that's basically Robinhood lending cash to consumers to trade stock. It's margin, right? So, like, I don't do this, and I don't recommend doing this unless you're a very skilled trader, is I could go to Robinhood, and I could get, let's say, $5,000 on margin. And that $5,000 is not my money, but I can use that to buy stock. And then at some point, Robinhood or whatever broker you're doing this on is going to come to you and they're going to call for the margin. They're going to say, hey, well, like, we need that capital back. And if your shares lose, your loss is now much more leveraged and you might not have that money. And so Robinhood could not meet a $3 billion margin call. And this, and simply what that means is so many people were betting on this meme stock to go up on margin, so not with their own money. That is literal degenerate gambling. You might as well go to Vegas.
Yeah,
with that money.
I remember with those meme stocks, Dogecoin was at the exact same time as all of that.
When a lot of people think that Elon had a part in pumping that.
He had a part in Dogecoin for sure, because he literally tweeted, like, buy Dogecoin and shit multiple times and made, like, memes about it.
You think how much money he could possibly have in an asset like that. And all he has...
funny, and it was genius.
He hasn't gotten in trouble for it, so that tells me, you know, who knows? I don't think Elon's the type of guy to do something fucked up like that. But if he was, he could quite simply go onto Twitter, tweet something about Dogecoin, buy up a ton of shares of it before he tweets that, watch it go up, and then sell all of it.
So that's what I thought he was doing. If he didn't get popped for that, then...
He got questioned for it, for sure.
Then that's... If he actually didn't get popped for it, and he just didn't have anything in Dogecoin, or he just never sold or anything, I think that's fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
That he literally did it just for the joke. But...
Hundo.
Wall Street Bets on Reddit was a big... player in things like GameStop, Best Buy, AMC, Nokia going
people up. Rallying together.
Yeah, it was literally just this fucking small little group of people initially that was just like, let's pump the shit out of these.
Yeah.
And they all collectively agreed. And for some reason, it worked. It was so weird because there's so many times where people are like, yeah, we're going to pump this cryptocurrency and shit, and it never happens. But these people all... agreed that they were just going to buy up a bunch of fucking GameStop and shit, and they all followed through with that agreement and bought a fuck ton of GameStop in the shot. They were shooting, I don't remember exact numbers, but essentially $2 stocks to $34 stocks.
And I'm sure some people made a lot of money on that, but I guarantee you about 98% guys.
The people that sold in time, they made $100,000, $500,000, maybe even a couple million.
That's luck.
And that is
selling in time, unless you are
a
super genius microcomputer for a brain. You're not going to be able to time everything correctly.
That shit dropped in value so fast. So there's no way to really...
What I say earlier, what goes up must come down. And normally in markets... if it's going up at a certain pace, you bet your ass it's going to go down even faster than that.
And that's what happened. It went down probably twice as fast as it went up. It was within one day, it just crashed.
Before you know it, like, you've lost your shirt. And so that's why, if you want to invest, come into your boy. Let's talk about it. Okay. So we'll wrap it up with Robin Hood Snacks. I think we're humming pretty good. Meta's shutting down its Microsoft Teams competitor. It's called Workplace after spreading itself too thin. Back to that kind of thing of like essentialism that we were talking about. So,
I'm surprised Meta's spreading themselves too thin. I don't even know about working.
There's a million things you could do as a company like them, and you got to be able to define like what's the mission, what's the vision, what are we trying to accomplish for people, and reverse engineer from that.
I guess they couldn't harvest enough data from a video sharing service or whatever, so they were like, let's figure out a way to harvest more data and make more money.
Yeah, they want to break into the office. That's
my pessimistic view.
Yesterday, as of the day of the shooting, Meta said it was ditching Workplace to lean into AI and the metaverse. Tech that it said would fundamentally, quote unquote, reshape the way we work. Trying to find interesting stuff in real time because this is a live read. So competing for your pings, Slack's success inspired Microsoft to launch Teams and Google to Slackify its workplace chat function, removing SMS, adding spaces for group chats. The pandemic caused workplace tools to surge in popularity as everybody went WFC, work from couch. Dude, this newsletter tries to be so trendy. It's kind of funny, but annoying. Salesforce acquired Slack for $28 billion in 2021, while Zoom revenues doubled for 5 straight quarters. Post-pandemic, Zoom's sales tightened to single digits as the number of couch-based workers stabilized. Meantime, Meta reportedly saw growth of its workplace service slow. As work tools get squeezed, there's less room for competition. It pays to pick the takeaway from this. It pays to pick a lane. Zuck's newfound swaggy style, Jesus, hasn't distracted investors from Meta's ballooning expenses. Last quarter, its metaverse division lost nearly $4 billion, and the tech titan projected it'll spend as much as $40 billion on AI this year. Still, it managed to double its profit last quarter by focusing on efficiency in other areas, cue layoffs, and shutting down side projects like Workplace. So I don't buy any Meta stock currently, so I feel comfortable talking about it on here. And we don't invest it for our clients, but I have held it in the past and it has done well for me. But there's just so many avenues for a company like Facebook. I still like calling them Facebook,
They're always going to be Facebook to me, man. I don't care if Facebook is just a certain division of Meta now.
But like Facebook is
Facebook, they are Facebook. X is Twitter,
Yeah, Hondo. I told you about this earlier. We're going to start doing events out here in Phoenix to, try and get some meetings with people. And we're going to completely use Facebook to get the room filled, right? Because people got to know that there's an event going on if you want to get people to your event.
Throw shit up on Craigslist too.
Hell no, boy. That ain't happening.
Why not, man?
Can't track the metrics. You can't see how well things are doing. And I'll never say never to anything, but, we'll keep the main thing type deal. Okay. Student loans, interest rates. Degree anxiety. Student loans are the second largest contributor to consumer debt after mortgages. While the Biden administration has canceled nearly $140 billion in student debt, Americans will still have around $1.8 trillion in outstanding student loan balances. Higher federal borrowing rates could pile on the burden. The new FAFSA financial aid system has been plagued with delays and glitches, leading to a drop in overall applications. To fill the financial gap, families could turn to private lenders, which often charge even higher interest rates than Uncle Sam. Takeaway on that, high interest can fuel disinterest in higher education. And I think we're seeing that in the high interest rate environment we are in, people are more reluctant to take on student debt. And we're more connected than ever. If you're focused enough, you can find and learn anything you want on the World Wide Web, YouTube University, or just simply, at a young age saying, I'm going to do YouTube, and you apply the right mentality to it. And then 7 years you look up, you're making your living off of it. I personally think I needed a degree to do what I needed to do. And a lot of people might feel that way, but golly, man, like, you know, I've seen a lot of meetings being in the business I'm in, intricate, intimate details about their lives. And, you know, people that want to be doctors, you know, jobs like that, like they got a lot of debt. They got a lot of it because they had to go to what, 10, 12 years of school. So I don't know. And then you factor in when you're 18 and you go to college, you got to decide, hey, like, this is what I want to, I'm going to decide what I want to do basically with the rest of my life and what I'm studying.
Do you have college debt, or do you have did you get in on a scholarship, or you just already got to pay it off?
Yeah, I got a partial and
football,
a partial scholarship. So most of it was academic.
Okay.
Yeah, I was a walk on for football, but, you know, got a good chunk. And then, you know, my parents took care of me. Thank God for them. So I don't have any, which is, you know, a blessing. But I feel like that decision, when you don't have those, you know, the resources, same situation, like, you know, it's a tough call right now. Cause that debt, you know, I've known so many people that do have student debt, and it's like, it's a big stressor. And I think a lot of the folks feel like they need to go to college in order for their folks to see them as a success, or whatever the case may be. I think there's a big psychological component, a big stigma, a big societal construct around it. I'm not saying going to college is bad or the wrong move. It just depends on what you're trying to do. And I think it's really hard to have that clarity at age 18. I didn't know who the hell I was when I was that young.
Man, I was only 18 4 years ago, and I
had no idea.
I was a completely fucking different person, and I can't imagine that I'll be anything like how I was now or when I was 18 in another 4 years.
I'm 27, and myself at 22 is like, you know, a lot different.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm 22 right now, so in like
everybody's 5 years,
I'll be where you're at right now, and I'll probably be looking back at my 22-year-old self.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck was that idiot doing on that podcast?
Yeah, and I mean, but that's a signal. Mark Manson said this. That's a signal of growth. If you look back on something you said or did and you kind of cringe a little bit, that's good, because that means you've grown.
You've grown past that point, yeah.
And that's why you're cringing. If you weren't cringing, then you probably are the same as you were when you said that. And relative to time, you know, that I'd say if you look back on something you were saying and doing at, you know, a young age and you weren't cringing, that would be a bad thing.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I'm saying? And there are probably some people like that out there, but, you know, it's important to try and it's a fine line between essentialism and saying, hey, you know, I'll try that. You know, I'll give that a rip. Oh, shit, I really like this. You know what I mean? So TikTok creators sued the U.S. government over its law that could ban or force a sale of the app within a year. ByteDance-owned TikTok said it's paying the group's legal costs as it fights to stay in the U.S. TikTok is interesting, brother. I posted a clip on YouTube Shorts that did really well. Really well. Like, top two best, like, in terms of views, clip from the show in the history of the show.
Was that one of the ones I sent you where I was Googling some shit that...
It was the insider trading clip.
Oh, okay.
Politicians, politicians insider trading, and how it's bullshit, and it is. And it got almost 8,000 views on YouTube Shorts. It got 18 views
on TikTok.
18.
That's insane, dude. It's so weird how hit or miss TikTok can be, because there's something like that where it's like an actual piece of content and then you get fucking 18 views.
Yeah.
But then I like when I first downloaded TikTok years ago, I uploaded a couple like random bullshit things to try to figure out how to use the app.
Yeah.
And some of those got like hundreds of views or even like a couple thousand. I was like,
yeah,
fuck, this isn't even anything that's like watchable.
It's just, and I have a really good friend that works for a big social media company. And so I trust her word on anything algorithm related. And she says that she talks to people from TikTok, people from Instagram a lot. And she asks them about how the algorithm works and they can't even explain it. People from Instagram, people from TikTok. She said by far YouTube Shorts is the most consistent algorithm out there, and they're able to properly explain how it works. And that's where our show's been doing best. YouTube's is where we've been doing really well on the short stuff. And at the end of the day, I like it that way, because what's the goal of this show? To grow on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
And so exactly. if there's no barrier, right? All you got to do on YouTube Shorts is click on my profile. All you're doing is clicking two times and you're subscribed to me. Mm-hmm. That's much easier. I haven't, to my knowledge, gotten a single subscriber on YouTube off of Snapchat, off of TikTok, off of Instagram, because there's a couple more steps in that, right? You got to really like what you're seeing on another platform to take your time. Even if the YouTube's in the bio and everything, which it is, you got to take the time. Okay, I like this video. Okay, I like this video enough. I'm going to look at what else this guy's got. And then they're probably going to spend time scrolling through and they got to like every single one. And it's like, it's kind of sales psychology, right? Like if I'm selling you something, you might actually need it, but I got to make you kind of want it to make that emotional decision of, hey, I'm going to buy whatever it is from you. And it's the same as getting people to subscribe to you. I feel like where if I am selling you something and I say, okay, great, you're ready to move forward. Like all you got to do is fill out this 5-page form, all your information. And then I'm going to take down your credit card after you're done with that. And then I'm going to put it into my processing system and all this stuff. By the time I'm putting it in the product, you're going to be like, hold on, wait a minute. I don't know. And so it's like eliminating those barriers. So the reason I like that we're doing well on YouTube Shorts is because they just got to click two things. There's no barrier.
Oh, yeah, dude. Like someone sees, especially like Instagram, it can be a blessing if someone finds your content through there and they actually, you know, make their way to the YouTube channel, but it can also suck balls because they might go on your Instagram because they saw like one of the reels from In the Jar and they're like, okay, cool. Like, you know, what else is this show about? And they look at a couple other reels and they're like, cool. And then they just follow you on Instagram.
Yeah.
Just watching the reels whenever you upload them. And see, they don't even go out of their way to click on like the YouTube video and see the actual like full podcast or anything.
Yeah. At the end of the day, and I mean, we've only been in this is the 19th episode, 19 weeks, you know, from my limited scope, I feel like if you just, and we're kind of getting more essentialist on here, like I'm not posting on TikTok as much anymore. I'm not posting on Instagram as much anymore. But I am posting every day on YouTube Shorts. And so it's kind of less skin off my back to just take 2 seconds, throw it on YouTube. And that's the focus. I did what I was supposed to do today, as opposed to, I've been doing this for the last couple of months where it's like, I'm going to post on every platform every day. And even if it's the same video, it takes, you know, like 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And to me, that's a lot of time, you know, on something like that. But at the end of the day, the short clips, man, it's just your marketing. It's just your commercial, right? You want them to eventually click on the commercial to watch your longer stuff. And our longer stuff did really well this past week. Our longer stuff.
Hell yeah. I was hoping the new
thumbnail.
Yeah. I don't know if you noticed it. Yeah. It kind of looked a little cleaner, in my opinion.
It's like bigger.
Yeah. I liked having the actual In the Jar logo in the thumbnail, but just with the way that one was formatted, it was easier to just kind of put the words on there.
Yeah. No, and I was going to tell you, like, you know, this video did well. Like, you know, let's keep it chugging and see what happens. But yeah, you know, it's just a journey, and we're trying to spread the good word. You know, talk about some real shit.
Yes.
Talk about some real shit. So we'll wrap this one up. I know we've kept y'all a little longer than normal, but this is In the Jar, episode 19, with your boy Dupe and the editor Luke. And we appreciate y'all tuning in. We appreciate y'all watching. Leave your thoughts down below if you got hit in the chest at any point throughout the course of this show. Hit the subscribe button. Do me a favor, be a friend, tell a friend. We'll talk to y'all next week for the 20th episode of In the Jar. This is episode 19. We appreciate y'all, love y'all, and we'll see.